Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Saturday, fellow actors and all listeners, Nationals fans, and to all the ships at sea. This is none other than your gracious host, William Powell, the king of DC media and the master of all he surveys. Today I'm live from the Courtyard Marriott in beautiful Southeast DC, getting ready to chop up some mad film game with several filmmakers who are part of the Real Independent Film Extravaganza, which is in its third year. Before we do that, let me remind you that Inside Acting is brought to you by the column DC Actors Examiner, most easily found by Googling DC Actors Examiner. Like I said, the Real Independent Film Extravaganza runs from Friday, October 12th, to Thursday, October 18th, and features films that will be shown at the West End Cinema, 2301 M Street Northwest. For more information, please go to www.reelindependentfilm.com. That's www.reelindependentfilm.com. And real is spelled R-E-E-L. So let's get ready for my first guest. We're going to have a fantastic time. And hello there. Who's on the phone?
Hello? This is Lee Matson.
Lee
Matson, director of Hated.
Okay. Hey, how you doing, Lee? This is William Powell. You're on the show Inside Acting.
Hey, William.
All right, man. All right. Glad you joined us today. So tell us a little bit about your film, man.
It's playing tonight at 9:15. It's a rock and roll movie about a girl who's a music publicist in New York City, and one of her bands is about to break big, and it's whether they're going to stay loyal to her for helping them get to where they're at, or they're going to kind of sell her out and go for the big time.
Okay. So how'd you come up with the idea, man?
It's actually loosely based on some experiences that happened to a friend of mine who's a music publicist in New York, and she wrote the script. So.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So how long did it take you to film it?
It took 4 weeks. We shot for 3 weeks in New York City and 1 week in Los Angeles.
Talk a little bit about your casting process.
All right. Well, we had a cast that was from all over the place. We had guys from New York City. We had a guy from England. The members of the band, one from England, his name's Augustus Prue, and he sent me a video audition.
Uh-huh.
The other actors I met with, and met with Chris Rigi. He's a New York-based actor who was on Gossip Girl, and we met up in New York, and just, you know, had drinks together and got comfortable with each other. And then he did a little audition. And another actor is from Australia. He plays the lead singer of the band. His name is Matthew Hutchinson. And I met up with him in L.A. For some drinks. And he's actually a musician. That's his main thing. So it was great to have a real musician in the band that, you know, added credibility to, you know, to the way they look, because that's the tough part about pulling off a movie that has a rock band in it, is just making them authentic, making them look real. And so it was great to have a real musician, and his band's called Our Mountain, and they're touring right now. And it was a pretty diverse process. It wasn't the typical have an office and set up auditions and have a bunch of people show up and you bring in one person at a time and they read for you. This was, getting guys from New York, from London, from Australia. So it was a little different than the traditional.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because I've had directors on before and they'll say things like, well, I cast people I know. And they don't really do the audition thing per se. They kind of hang out and they network and they know people and they meet
right.
people here, they meet people there, and they get to know people and get comfortable with them. Sometimes they'll have to sit down and just have coffee with them. So it seems like you have that same kind of laid back approach.
Yeah. We, I got a couple of the actors together even before I totally committed to to these actors just to see how they were around each other as well. Once I got the good vibe from them, we went for it. But there was, there was auditioning happening. It wasn't just, hey, you seem like a cool person and, I'd like to work with you. There was certainly a part of that because this is my third feature film, so I know that you need to, have a good rapport with people because you're basically living together for a month. So it was a little non-traditional, but, we still had, they still had to perform, to get the job.
That's what's up, man. So
yeah.
Tell me about some of your other films.
One of my other films, the one that I finished before this one's called Happy in the Valley. And it's starring William Forsythe from Boardwalk Empire. And,
wow.
He's on, I guess, a new show on maybe CBS called The Mob Doctor.
Right.
And he was great, and we just closed the deal with the distributor for that one, so that's going to be coming out early 2013.
Oh, that's fantastic.
It'll come out on DVD and Netflix and on demand and all the streaming platforms and all that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about financing. How do you handle that?
Well, I got private financing for all three of my films. The very first movie I did was called Players, and it was starring Freddie Rodriguez from 6 Feet Under, a series that was on HBO a few years back and that was really popular. And before I made that movie, I went out and I shot a preview for the movie. I shot a trailer for the movie without actually making the movie. And I started to send that all over the place and get that to everybody that would, look at it. And after a couple of years, finally a guy that owned a successful clothing line saw the preview and said, how much do you need to make this movie? And he didn't give me the amount that I asked for, but he gave me enough to go make my first movie, so I went for it. And
okay, Lee, I've got somebody else that's been on hold. Just hold on a second.
Sounds good.
Okay, let's see who else is on this line. Hello, welcome to Inside Acting. Who's on the phone?
This is Stephen Venezia. I was the director of An Eternum that will be playing at the festival.
Okay. All right, yeah, and I've got somebody else on the phone. Hold on a second.
Okay.
Hello, welcome to Inside Acting. This is William Powell. Who's on the phone?
This is James
Carter. Can you speak up a little bit?
This is I was the director of An Eternum that will be playing at the festival this weekend.
Oh, okay. I just pat somebody else in at 917. Hey, 917. Hello.
Hey, how are you doing? This is James Carman.
Oh, James. Hey, James, what's up, man? What's your film?
My film is called The Hidden Hand,
Alien
Contact and the Government Cover-Up.
Oh, okay. All right, so I was just talking to Lee about how he handled financing for his films. Okay, so James, why don't you talk a little bit about that. How did you finance your film, man?
I financed it by myself. I just, paid for it a little bit at a time, worked on it steadily over many years, and then, just kept on adding on to it as I wanted to.
Okay. All right. All right. Was that Steve?
Yeah.
Yeah. So just the same question, man. How'd you handle finance?
Actually, we did it through Kickstarter. We just put up we made a video for it, put it up, and we were lucky enough to have a bunch of generous people actually start donating to it. And we had it up for about, 90 days, and we made a little bit more than we were hoping. But it all ended up coming our way, and it was enough to finance the pre-production, production, and post, too.
Okay. All right. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about plots. I know Lee had already talked about what his movie was about. So, Steve, I'll have you go first. Tell us a little bit about your movie, and then, James, you talk a little bit about yours, the storyline.
Okay. In Eternum is about a brilliant aeronautical space engineer, and he's asked by his superiors to go aboard this ship on a deep space mission, And while he's out there, he receives some tragic news that is basically the catalyst for the rest of the story. I can't really get too much into it without, you know, divulging into the rest of the story, but it's basically the beginning of how we lead through the entire film.
Okay. All right, James?
My film is called The Hidden Hand, and it's a documentary. It's an overview of kind of the whole E.T. story, you know, from beginning to end. So it's kind of like a primer for someone who doesn't really know that much, so they could kind of just see what's being said about it and what a lot of experts and what a lot of experiencers say. And it just puts it out there. It doesn't say this is right or this is wrong. It just puts it out there and lets the viewer decide, you know, if they think it has credence or not.
Interesting. Okay, I'm going to go back to Lee now. Lee, talk a little bit about how you heard about the Real Independent Film Extravaganza.
Well, we've been doing the film festival thing for a little while now, and you know, it came up on a list of festivals, and it looked like it would be interesting to come to D.C., and it's part of our, you know, nowadays it's hard to get into theaters, and even if you have a, you know, a feature film that, you know, that looks great and sounds great, it's just still it's tough if you don't have a huge star to get in the theater. So this is almost like our way to take it to different cities and expose it to people. And I found out about the festival online through Without a Box, which is a service that you can go through to sign up for.
Okay, Without a Box.
Yeah.
Okay, so it looks like we have, let's see, guest number 4 has joined us from area code 502. Hello, who's on the phone? This is William Powell with Inside Acting.
This is Nick Redding.
Okay, hey, Nick, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Okay, what's the name of your film?
It's called Welcome Alive. It just played.
Okay.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about it.
Well, it's an experimental feature. It's about an hour long. I made it in my last year as a student at the Evergreen State College. And yeah, I guess the kind of the narrative arc is basically there's this character who is seeking a certain kind of knowledge, and anytime they get close to it, they get turned around, you know, so it's kind of this person who is constantly, like, seeking the next thing and doesn't really know what they're looking for, essentially. it's about ritual. It's about the kind of ritualistic mindset of man, and trying to work with it and also questioning it. So.
Okay. I'm going to repeat a question I had a little earlier.
Okay.
And then I asked my other guests, talk a little bit about finance and how did you handle that?
Geez. well, I got a grant from the school, but I shot on 16mm, so the grant didn't cover all the costs. Pretty much I just went into debt over it. I took some loans out. I used my college loans to pay for it. But really the only thing I paid for ended up being was the film stock and the processing. And I made all my own props and was working in the scene shop over at the college, so I was able to use all the equipment that they had. I learned how to weld in the process a little bit. So, yeah. You know, and all the actors were good friends of mine and that sort of thing. So it was, you know, really easy to work with them, for one thing, you know. And then I just had to make food, which was not a problem. Yeah.
So you made your own props. And that brings up another question. I'm going to throw this out here to Steve and James. Now, I guess I'll let you go first, Steve, and then James. Talk a little bit about the any special effects that you had to come up with.
Well, the special effects was an incredibly long process. You know, it starts with, you know, I was doing concept art for a while, but I was lucky enough to have one of my very close friends, Dan Giraldo, who was the supervisor on the film. And basically, he knew a lot of people at the school that we were going to. He led this amazing crew, and it was just day by day we were, you know, trying to work out the tweaks and stuff. All of it's CG environments. We used, you know, programs like Houdini and everything to get the result we wanted, but about, I would say 60% of the film was shot on green screen, and it was a really long, arduous process. It paid off in the end, and I think it ended up looking exactly like I wanted it to.
Where'd you get your green screen?
We went to the Savannah College of Art and Design. I was studying film and television. He was studying visual effects. And they have a green screen studio. That's actually, it's a wonderful stage. And we basically, you know, we used that, but we also created our own blue screen and brought it wherever. It was a collapsible blue screen. So, you know, that's basically where we got our you know, set for all that.
Huh. A collapsible green screen. I never heard of such. Learn something new every day.
It was very do-it-yourself. It was PVC pipes as a frame with hooks that, you know, just held the right color green for us to pull keys from.
All right. So, James, talk a little bit about your any special effects that you had in your film.
Well, I used also, like I would say, with 80% green screen.
Can you speak up a little bit?
I used 80% green screen.
Uh-huh.
And it was also something that I moved around from person to person, so I always had to break it down and set it up. And I used a lot of then abstract backgrounds behind that, and then I used a lot of After Effects just to make it a lot snazzier and make the transitions easier. And I melded that a lot with painting and added After Effects into paintings and, that was basically what I did.
Okay, I'm going to backtrack a little bit to Lee. So now your film, did it have a lot of special effects or anything like that or what?
Yeah, no, it didn't really have many. It just had one scene where we shot in an airport, and, you know, it's tough to get into those airports nowadays if you don't have the... you're doing a low-budget film, and we had a scene where they were flying from New York to L.A., and so we were able to shoot at the exterior of Newark Airport, but once we were inside, we couldn't shoot inside, so we had to do that on a stage, and we had a green screen that we, and then we put a shot of a runway with a air traffic control tower and I guess that was it. That was the only special effects shot, was making that airport shot work. And it works. It looks good. It's but you wouldn't know it if nobody told you, you wouldn't know that it was an effect shot, because it's just the kids, you know, getting ready to take their big trip to Los Angeles to sign with a major label to become rock stars. And,
right.
We had to put this, we had to make it real, so.
Yeah, you know, I think that's the best effect shots are the one that you don't know are effect shots.
Right.
You see, we watch these films like The Avengers and things like that. They show these robots and aliens and things that you know that can't exist.
Right.
So I kind of like the ones where it's sort of, it's seamless. It's really seamless. And a lot of times, it's not just about building monsters. Sometimes it's about, I know Joss Whedon, who directed Avengers, was saying there was one scene where there was a character standing there, and then they were able to block him out with, you know, digitally.
Mm-hmm.
He thought it was amazing. He said it even scared him a little bit, that how they can just, like, take somebody out, where before in the past you might have to reshoot a scene. Well, now you can just go in digitally and just, you know, kind of paint people out of the picture.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
it's amazing what they can do.
Yeah. Okay, so let's move on to Lee. What inspired you to be a filmmaker?
I think I, you know, as somewhat of a traditional or a cliche story, I worked at a video rental store when I was in high school, and I think I was the only one in my little town that was watching all the foreign films and Last Tango in Paris and things like that. And I was just inspired by what you could do with film. And borrowed my older brother's video camera and started making short films with my high school buddies. And Then at one point, you know, when I got into college, I still, you know, came from a small town. So I thought, I don't know, you know, this filmmaking stuff, I don't know if I, it seems like it's other people do it. And then, I, you know, it just hit me that, hey, I could do this too. And so I went to New York Film Academy, and that was it. Then after that, moved to Los Angeles and had a deal for my first script about 6 months later after I got to L.A.
Wow, it sounded like you really knew what you wanted to do.
Oh, yeah, I was, yeah, there wasn't really a fallback plan after I decided this is what I'm going to do. There wasn't a plan B. Even though my parents wanted me to have a plan B, there was no plan B.
Yeah, that's something that's really important, I think, sometimes, is to have, sometimes you got to burn the bridges and burn the ships behind you.
Yeah.
I had a guy on earlier this year, Gabriel Voss. He's an actor. He used to be a lawyer here in the DMV area. He worked up in Baltimore, and he moved to L.A. back in summer of 2011, and he's already made, like, about 10 films. In fact, one of them stars Vivica Fox.
Oh,
and he's
nice.
He's out there in L.A. just burning it up. I mean, he's burning Hollywood up right now.
Yeah,
that's one of
like
the things
it.
He said, is that the day that he signed the exit papers from the law firm and quit his job and move out to L.A. was like, it was simultaneously one of the scariest days in his life and one of the most exhilarating.
Yeah, absolutely. When your college friends are all buying their first house and you're trying to find ways to pay your rent so you can keep going for the dream, it gets a little scary sometimes. But yeah, you can't. Once it starts to happen, you can't beat it.
That's right. Okay, Steve. So, what inspired you to be a filmmaker?
It's a good question. I guess as early as I can remember, I had an aunt who was, she had always shown me very cool films that were like, you know, the ones that weren't in the movie theater and stuff. She was showing me like Hitchcock films when I was, you know, in like third grade. And I remember she specifically handed me a copy of Vertigo on VHS. And it was right after I watched that movie. I don't know why, but it pulled something in my, you know, in my being that was like, this is what I want to do. I want to make movies. So it was really at that moment, and I, you know, I never forget it.
Wow. Okay, James. So what inspired you to be a filmmaker?
I'm a composer, a music composer, and so when I was younger, I would I started making videos to accompany my music scores, and so then slowly, and this was all very abstract, experimental stuff, and then slowly I got more into shooting films and working on films, and so I started working a lot as a cinematographer.
Okay. All right. So, Nick, talk a little bit about what inspired you to become a filmmaker.
I have more of a background in, I guess I should say I started out more with a background in more classical painting and drawing type studies. And I guess the first time I even thought about becoming a filmmaker, I was applying for this program in Kentucky called the Governor's School for the Arts, and I was applying as a painting and drawing major. I happened to get the film instructor when I was applying, and you know, he offered me a position in that program there. Even though my work was all painting, he said it had a narrative quality. So you know, of course, I accepted, and I kind of haven't looked back since then. I guess I like it because it's, you know, a combination of all these different things that I like to do, because, you know, I'm a painter, I work with fabrics, I like making music and photography and all these sort of things. So it's the only way where I can just make what feels like a full, engaging work of art, really.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay, so I've got a question out there I'm going to throw out to all you guys. And I guess I'll start with James. So now, James, What is or do you have a 2-year plan as it pertains to filmmaking?
What is my 2-year plan?
Yeah, so what kind of films do you see yourself making in the next 2 years?
Well, I started super conscious. It's about people who have extraordinary gifts and abilities.
Okay.
So I think it'll take me 2 years to finish it, and then I'll be where I am now, and I'll be promoting it.
Oh, okay. I didn't catch the title of that one. What's the title
it's
of that one?
Called Super Conscious.
Super Conscious?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're kind of in the process of casting or writing, or where are you?
Well, I've already shot a lot of it. I'm going to cut a promo for it and get some money, and then I'll finish it. So I've already shot a little bit of it.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's good. Okay, Steve, same question. Talk a little bit about, you know, the next 2 years. What you got coming up?
Well, I actually just started my whole career in film, basically. I mean, I just graduated from college, and I moved to New York City, and right now I've been on, you know, a handful of sets, and I'm interning. And so right now I'm going to continue that track for a little bit, just trying to get a little more real-world experience that I, you know, it's not a bad thing to have under your belt, so I would like to continue that for a little bit. But in the meantime, I'm always writing. I'm trying to write actually a few shorts and maybe a feature or two. I'd like to actually finish those in the next 2 months or so, and just continue what I'm doing. Hopefully, you know, some more opportunities will come about. But in the meantime, just, you know, continue shooting, helping people out on different sets, and writing my own scripts.
So, Lee, I know you got some stuff coming up, so talk about your plans.
Yeah, well, we're, you know, taking Hated to some other festivals. We got a festival in a couple of weeks from now. We were just in one last week, so we're just going to keep doing the festival thing with Hated for a little while, and we're trying to get U.S. distribution right now. We already have some European distribution happening for Hated, we're trying to look for U.S. distribution, so just pushing that out there and getting my other film, Happy in the Valley, out there, and I'm writing a science fiction script, once that's done, you know, raise the money and go shoot that. So hopefully I'll be shooting this sci-fi film at some point next year.
Okay, Mr. Redding, you're up. What you got coming?
I don't really like to think even 2 weeks ahead, but I can tell you the screenplay I'm working on right now. Right now the working title is called The Prince of Himself, and it's another kind of experimental narrative, working with ideas of mythology again. This time I'm thinking a kind of inner-city playwright who's working on an operatic version of Euripides' The Bacchae.
Wow.
And the main character of The Bacchae, Dionysus himself, kind of like comes down from the valley, or from the mountaintop, and as a circus performer. And he gets cast in the main role and ends up just kind of like ripping the town apart and instilling chaos. So a kind of like carnival piece, I think. But yeah, that's what I got going. Right now I'm just traveling around, so yeah.
I'm thinking about another question that's really always intrigued me about filmmakers, and Nick, I'm going to start with you. What film really inspires you? It really gets your creative juices flowing?
I would have to say 8.5 by Federico Fellini. Definitely, like, Fellini is just one of those filmmakers that really, I think, like, cuts to the quick, and in just a simple gesture, he can show, like, so much psychological depth. And, that, I don't know, 8.5 is just, like, you know, every time I watch it, I find something new to love about it, so.
Okay, Lee, what film inspires you to be creative?
Oh, man, it's a tough question. There's so many great films out there. It seems like every year I have a new favorite film. But I'd say one of the films that kind of blew me away that I thought, wow, you can do this with movies was The Bad Lieutenant by Abel Ferrara. He's a great New York City director, and I love his work, Abel Ferrara. And Apocalypse Now, Coppola is amazing. Goodfellas, Scorsese. I mean, can kind of do the rundown of like the great movies that everybody digs. I mean, I definitely dig on those, but it's a really tough question to just say, have one film that I'll probably hang up the phone and go, oh, I should have said this one or this one, but. Yeah,
that Abel Ferrara, he's a pretty wild guy.
Yeah. Yeah, he's had an eclectic career, and he's worked with a lot of interesting people, and just the diverse music that he uses and the locations and the subject matter and the risks that he takes, but it's still a coherent film. It's not some crazy abstract thing that you don't really know what's going on, but it still is taking risks, and I love it when artists take risks, but a risk that we can all enjoy, not a risk that is something that excruciating and self-indulgent.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of self-indulgence out there.
Oh yeah, there's doing the festival routine, doing this festival circuit. There's been I've gotten stuck in a few movies where it's wow.
Okay, well, moving right along. Steve, what's some of the films that have inspired you to be creative?
That's a tough question. And, I guess I feel like whenever I see a new film that inspires me, that's the one at the moment that really gets to me. And I would have to say it's this independent film called Bellflower that was an official selection at Sundance. And it's a feature debut from this director, Evan, I guess Godel is his name, but it is unlike any film I've ever seen in my entire life, from the style to the storytelling, the actual camera work and the acting. It's one of those mumblecore films, and I've never seen one of those either. But it is one of the films that I constantly go back to, and I'm like, there's raw energy there, and it's just like he's a young director too, and it actually just inspires me to get out there and do something original and something that nobody's ever seen before, and it's one of those films. I love it.
Okay, James, you're on.
I really love Koyaan Eskaazi. That came out, the music of Philip Glass. I thought that was an amazing film. Recently, I love Another Earth. I love Shame with Michael Fassbender. I think those are great, really great films. So that's kind of, and also I love Melancholy by Lars von Trier.
Okay. So, James, I'm going to ask you another question. Let's come at you with some of the hot directors that are out there, or even some of the old-time directors. And as far as your style, what director are you closest to?
Right here.
I can't say. I mean, I've always liked Antonioni. I've always liked Tarkovsky. Even Werner Herzog, Fassbinder, those are the kind of the ones I've liked the most.
Okay, Steve, so what's some directors that are a director or directors that in style that you feel you're kin with, that you really feel close to?
I mean, I don't think I'm at the caliber yet or even the point in my career where I actually...
Okay, that's an honest answer.
But in all honesty, I admire directors. I admire like to at least mimic his style, but in no way am I in any way connected to their greatness,
Okay. All right, Lee, same question.
Well, I love Paul Thomas Anderson. I think he's great. He's got something special happening. Of course, I love Werner Herzog, who was mentioned earlier, and one of his cinematographers who shot 15 of Werner Herzog's movies was my cinematographer. His name's Peter Zeitlinger. He shot Hated, so if you want to check out some amazing cinematography, it's playing tonight at 9:15.
Okay, that's a good plug. All right, Nick, same question. What's some directors that you think you're close to in style?
Close to in style, probably Alejandro Jodorowsky is a big kind of aesthetic influence in mine. Louis Buñuel sometimes. I feel like I'm more influenced by Fellini than anybody, but I'm not sure if it actually comes through that clearly in my work. Maybe like the way I think about it, I try and think about it in almost like in a lens of Fellini. I guess some of his later works maybe would fit in a little bit better. What's his name? Jean Vigo is a big influence of mine. Yeah, so that's kind of a little platter there.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about a little bit more about the real independent film extravaganza. Compare it to some of the past festivals you've been in. Lee, why don't you handle that one?
Yeah, I think it's great. I like it when they're a little smaller and more intimate, and you get to meet people and talk with people. The film going audience, you get to talk with other directors, and I mean, you know, the minute you start talking with directors, it's, you know, it can go on and on because we're all in the same club together, and so I like you know, this one's great because it's nice and you know, it's a nice size. They're taking care of everybody, and where I've been to some festivals, they're so huge and there's so many films, and you know, you don't feel as special as you do with the real film extravaganza.
I'm going to switch gears a little bit now. Let's get back into some technical questions. I've always been curious about editing, the whole editing of a film. It seems to me like a film can be, it can be made or broken by the editing, and a lot of the editing is, you could shape the narrative, I think, in the editing. So, James, why don't you talk a little bit about how you handle the editing process? What's some of the things that you try to bring to it?
Well, first off, I get kind of like a cut of everything I wanted in it. I think of making a film like making a soup or doing a painting. You get the main ingredients in there, and you get your main arc in there, and then you want to refine it and add a little bit of this or a little splash of that, and just to kind of, it's an organic process, so it's just, you're molding it and shaping it like you would.
James, can you hold on a second? I got somebody else coming on. Hello, this is William Powell, Inside Acting. Who's on the phone?
Josh.
Josh?
Yes.
Josh who?
This is Josh Murray.
Okay, how you doing, Josh? And what's the name of your film?
My film's name is called The Soliloquy, the short.
Okay. Okay, I'm a throw you right into the pan right here. We were just talking about the whole editing process. What are some of the things that you bring to editing?
What are some of the things that I bring to editing?
Yeah.
Well, a great editor, first of all. So I didn't edit the film, although I was.
So you get somebody else.
I sat with the editor, but I had a great editor, JD Medlock, who put things together, and has a great eye for making the cuts. What I try to do is push him to keep experimenting and to find other options, you know, and not just settle for the first impression or something that looks good. But to kind of try and push things in like both directions and see, you know, where's that happy medium to being, you know, too long or too short,
Okay. Let's backtrack a little bit. I know you missed a little bit, but talk a little bit about your movie.
Okay. I should say I'm an actor first and foremost, and this is
okay.
My first time directing a film. It is a contemporary adaptation of Macbeth using original text. So it's a contemporary setting, but using the classical language. It's centered around the crux of the story of Macbeth in real time, but sort of includes elements of the whole story. So it sort of encapsulates the whole story in 8 minutes, sort of at the core of the story in 8 minutes, using some impressionistic elements. It's very experiential type thing. It's very intense and very concentrated.
Okay, and talk a little bit about how you found out about this particular film festival.
Through Anthony directly. He had done some screenings of films in the area and had found out about mine and he had seen the trailer and really liked it. He said, you know, I should submit it. So that's how I ended up here.
Okay. I'm going to switch gears here. Nick, talk a little bit about, let's pick up the trail on editing, some of the things you bring to editing.
I like to do all, I'm a pretty, I guess you could say, raw filmmaker, so I don't do a lot of special effects or stuff like that. I like to have everything that I could possibly have in front of the camera to just go ahead and have it there. I do some color correction, but that's pretty much it. So in my mind, I could be on set for 48 hours straight, but I can only edit for like 2 hours at a time. So I guess my editing strategy is to take a lot of breaks and give myself a lot of treats. I just don't like, sitting down in front of a computer hours and hours.
I took a videography course a long, long time ago, and they had something called the High 8 camera. And that was High 8 cameras were new.
Oh, yeah.
It was a long, long time ago. In fact, when I was editing, I think I saw some dinosaurs out the window.
Okay.
But anyway, I remember how excruciating it was the teacher had us write the letter A on a chalkboard and B on a chalkboard, and we had to, like, splice A and B. And I just about got a headache trying to do that. That was crazy.
Yeah. Well,
okay, so Lee, talk a little bit about editing. What you bring to editing?
I love editing. You can make performances better. You can make the movie tighter, of course. You can do so much with editing. With the film I have right now with Hated, after I had the original, the first cut done, I showed it to a group of people that were all, people that I respect and that I'm friends with, and I rented out a small screening room and showed it to them. And afterwards, talked with everybody and had everybody fill out a little form of, what the story meant to them, what they got out of it, what they liked, what they didn't like, and what they didn't like. And I got back into the editing room and trimmed out 10 minutes. And, if that 10 minutes was still in there, who knows? Maybe it would, I wouldn't get the same reaction I get with the film that I do now. And so, it really makes or breaks a movie, in the editing room. I mean, that's the scary thing about, or the exciting thing about the filmmaking process is every stage is kind of a make or break type thing. If, got to have a great script. If the script's not there, then you could be in trouble. If the cinematography's not up to par, you can be in trouble. Acting, editing. So every phase is it's a lot of work, and you have to be willing to sacrifice some things that you might like, or that you had a good time shooting, or that people seem to, you know, enjoy this. But when you see it in the context of the entire film, and you're trying to keep people entertained for an hour and a half, sometimes you got to trim it down.
All right. No.
Yeah, sometimes you have to kill your little darlings.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, there's so many things, what do you call it, the film commentaries where the guy says, oh, it was a great scene, but I had to kill it. This didn't have enough time.
Yeah. I mean, even in my other film with William Forsythe, Happy in the Valley, I did the same thing after I took it to a film festival in Monaco, and we had a great screening and won some awards, but I noticed some problems with the sound. And when I got back to L.A., I got back into the editing room, and I was fixing the sound. But at the same time as I was fixing the sound, I thought, you know, this scene could be a little tighter, and this scene could be a little tighter, and do I absolutely need this scene? I love this scene. It makes me laugh in the editing room, but, you got to sometimes kill your darlings, kill the babies, as they say. And so I cut out a couple entire, complete scenes that were in the movie that I liked, but you had to sacrifice them, and it was for the greater good of the movie, because now it's just nice and tight, and we got a distribution deal right after I cut 12 minutes out of it. So
yep, that's the way it goes sometimes. Okay,
yep.
So Steve, same question.
Well, for me, it was a little different than traditional editing. Because our film was so visual effects heavy, we needed to be very specific about the shots. Basically we couldn't say, like, we might do this and then spend a week on visual effects and not use the shots. So basically we did animatics for each scene, and we were, like, incredibly thorough with the whole process. We, we didn't want to sit there and work a week to not use something. And like you were saying, like killing your darling after a vis effects team works on something and not have it come into the film, it'd be heartbreaking for them. But we basically had the movie shot exactly like it was going to be edited, just right down the line. We didn't shoot any extra scenes. We got the takes that we wanted to, and it all just fit right in place. It was just a matter of tweaking, how long this was going to stay on screen, or, just having the entire duration of the film being cut or extended. So it was a little untraditional, but in the end, for our film in particular, it worked out pretty well.
Okay. All right, Josh, I'm going to backtrack a little bit for you and ask you, what inspired you to become a filmmaker?
What inspired me to become a filmmaker? Well, like I said, I'm an actor, and so I've worked. I'm sorry, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, cool. I am. I've been on tons of sets, and sort of had the opportunity to see things, behind the camera, just being around on set, even though I'd never tried to make a film myself before. And especially with lower budget independent film, I just seen a lot of projects that didn't go the way I wanted them to go, or even projects that were more professional that were just so on such a tight schedule that there was a lot of stuff that I felt that was, kind of hurried along. And so what I wanted to do was just to try, have the experience of making a film and working on a film and acting in a film, where, the schedule was not the god, which, has what it usually has to be on a film set. So I kind of used this as an opportunity to be a little bit more experimental, a little bit more creative, and to try things without having so much of a pressure to get it done. I also wanted to try to be able to work on a set where I had a little bit of creative control over the process and what the environment would be like. And I wanted to correct a lot of the problems that I saw in lower budget projects that I've worked on, and avoid some of those pitfalls that I kind of was able to see as a third party. But I mean, probably most of all, even though I've kind of approached things more from the acting perspective, I always sort of saw movies in my head, and it was something that a story and the concept that I really wanted to see happening. It was something that was kind of different and unique, I thought, and I wanted to have that picture in my head to be on screen to show other people kind of like what's going on in my brain and the picture that I'm seeing. And it was definitely everything that I had hoped it would be in the end, just to see that finished product. And it was a real thrill to get with that first audience and have other people watch it.
Okay. And also, Josh, tell me a little bit about your plans for the next 2 years, your two-year plan. What you got coming up?
My two-year plan. Well, the team that I pulled together, I sort of corralled a group of friends in the area to do this project, and I have worked with some of the same people on the two other shorts this year. Coming up, I'm still not as a director, I'm not, you know, focusing on that. I certainly hope and plan to at some point direct, and I don't know if it will happen in the next 2 years, but I will definitely be involved in helping produce stuff. And so one of the things that we're thinking about is web series, possibly, and you know, maybe that first feature. But I don't want to. I spent an insane amount of time working on a short film, and so I feel like if I do a feature, or I'm involved in helping make a feature happen, it would only be if the money comes first, because I feel like shorts are a great way to learn and experiment. I don't know that I have the patience or the courage to make a feature film a really high quality without money. So my next steps would be to work on funding and investment before proceeding. I know some people have made it happen on their own, and God bless them.
Well, yeah, you might want to exchange numbers with some of the guys on the phone, because we talked about that a little bit earlier, about how to raise money for films. I know that's always a challenge.
Yep.
Okay, so, folks, we're down to about 6 minutes, and I believe everybody on the phone is up for an award except for Josh. Is that correct? So, Josh, you're not up for one, or...?
No, I don't believe I'm
okay.
Awarded this one. We got a few picked up a few things at our previous film festival in North Carolina. It's actually interesting how the different responses have been with different festivals, because they tend to appreciate the quality of the product but don't always understand the content, and so gotten sort of mixed feedback. Like a couple of them have like really loved them, and others have not even accepted them, obviously. So
okay, all right, everybody, we're down to about 5 minutes, so this is what I'm going to do. Sometimes as an actor, I've been in auditions where sometimes they give you like a number. I'm gonna give everybody a number, and basically based on your number, I want you to just talk a little bit about any websites or any marketing. This is your time to plug. I'm going to give everybody a little bit of time to plug any last thoughts about the festival, anything else you want to say before we sign off. And I'm going to give everybody a number, and you're going to go according to that number. So and don't say anything until I give out all the numbers. So let's see. James, you're going to be number one. Steve, let's make you number two. And Nick, how about you be number three? And see, Josh, I'll make you four. And Lee, I'm going to make you five. Okay, so James, you're up. So just plug anything you want to plug in last words.
So if you want to see, follow my film, it's hiddenhandthemovie.com. So there you can keep updates. And my next festival screening is going to be in Los Angeles. It's a festival, it's called Aliens to Zombies, and that's at the W Hotel in Hollywood. I think it's in Hollywood, Beverly Hills. But, thank you for having me, and I think it's a wonderful festival, and good luck to all of you other guys.
You're welcome. Okay, number two?
Well, if you're interested in the film, it's going to be playing tomorrow here in D.C. At 5 o'clock with the short narrative selection, so come out if you can. Also, if you want to follow the film, it's In Aeternum, I-N-A-E-T-E-R-N-A-M, film.com. And anyways, there's a trailer up online, so check it out if you can. But thank you so much to the festival for having us, and it's really an honor to have the film shown here.
Okay, sounds great. Okay, number three.
So once again, my film is called Welcome, O Life. I'd be happy if to answer any questions by email. I don't have a website right now, so nick.s.redding@gmail.com. You can reach me at, and, you know, any questions or anything like that. If you happen to be in Olympia, Washington, I'll be playing up there. So otherwise, yeah.
All right, number four. Number four, let's go.
Number four. The best way to keep up with what we're doing and the story itself is Category 3 Pictures on Facebook. You can look it up in the search box or go to facebook.com/category3pictures. That's the number 3, so category digit 3 pictures. You can also get a hold of me at joshmurray.net, joshmurray.net. And we have some other films that we're working on that we are posting on the Category 3 Pictures Facebook page, so you can see those there, as well as find links to the trailer and info how to see the soliloquy if you didn't get out to the festival.
Right.
And I just want to say thanks to Anthony. He's doing great work in the DMV area with bringing independent film.
He sure has.
Out there. Yeah.
All right, number five.
Hey, all right. Well, my movie is called Hated, H-A-T-E-D, and you can catch a trailer for it on facebook.com/themoviehated. And the other film that I mentioned was Happy in the Valley, and the same deal. It's facebook.com/happyinthevalley. And our film, as I mentioned before, is playing tonight at 9:15. I'd love to see you guys out there. And thank you for having us on your podcast, William. It's been great.
It's been a pleasure, and I thank you guys so much for joining me. I've learned a lot about filmmaking today.
Great.
All right, guys. Well, also let me just say good luck to you and all of you who are up for awards. I hope you win.
Thank
and
you.
I've had a fantastic time, and I just want to put out there to all my listeners to do something for their career every day and break a leg. All right. Good night, everybody.
Thanks, man.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Cheers.
Yep.